welcome everybody to another edition of the Thunder Buddies podcast. I feel like I haven't been on the Thunder Buddies podcast in 16 years, but
I feel like it's all I've done.
It's basically just been like a week for me. I mean, you've been on for the past two, I suppose.
Been like a month for me.
It's been like a decade for you. That's Barry Trammell, ladies and gentlemen.
I think it was last year when I last did one.
Yo, I'm Brett Dawson, but you guys know who I am by now.
Happy New Year. I'm Eric Horn.
What I've been doing is a lot of solo pods. That's why it feels like I've done so many of them, because I've been doing it by myself. It's a lot of talking by yourself. I don't like
it. Is podcasts done by themselves a real podcast?
Pod.
I mean,
sounds like a soliloquy to me.
I'm counting it.
Podcasts by yourself are really hard because you run out of breath.
Yeah.
When I do the solos, I typically just take a deep breath and have a pause, and I'm like, look, y'all just got to deal with it.
Do you ever think about just writing it out, typing out your podcast, and then just reading it?
Then we would be up until never. We would never go to sleep.
Okay.
Yeah. Also, like, a lot of times I just take questions, and then I don't read those in advance at all. I just blindly jump into answering the questions so that I can sound like an idiot.
Final score tonight for the Thunder. Barry, you picked a great game to return to Thunderland for 95-88 win over the probably the worst team in the league,
probably.
Sacramento Kings. Look, it doesn't show up in the record, but I was telling Brett before the game, I gave him a pop quiz. I said, Brett, who's the worst team offensively in the league in points per 100 possessions?
Kings.
I said, Brett, who's the worst team in the league in points allowed per 100 possessions?
Kings.
The Kings are dead last
really?
In both.
Somehow avoid not having the worst record.
They are dead last in the league in net rating. They were a minus 10 coming into this game. That is, I think, the next closest team was Phoenix, and Phoenix was a minus 6.7. So the Kings, when they lose bad, except when they're playing the Thunder.
I say, I've seen the Kings twice. They seem pretty good to me.
They got world beaters if they're playing the Thunder.
Beat him once, had a chance to beat him again.
Their net rating is positive against the Thunder this year.
Yeah, because they smoked them the first time. Yeah. But tonight, you know, Thunder at home is a different animal. This is a different Thunder team than we saw earlier in the season when they were just in a slump of slumps. They're still not a great team. They're just an okay team. You know, now they're 24-20. But this was a pretty non-eventful game until basically the last 3 minutes of the game. When everything got fun, ridiculous.
I thought it was eventful for their incompetence in the first half. When that was awful. They were down 14 points in the first half. Russell had 5 turnovers in the first quarter. The team was shot 50%, less than 50% from the line.
Oh, the free throw shooting.
Oh
boy. We'll get into that.
That never got fixed.
Steven Adams looked like he just went off the rails. And he's typically – in the 63. He was shooting like 63% for the season coming into this game, which is
up for him.
It's a career high for him. Yeah. But have mercy. If he doesn't
get better, they're going to confuse opponents who want a hack a shack. They won't know who to grab, him or Andre.
They'll just be throwing it down the court to Paul George. He'll be dunking while they're trying to communicate.
Now, look, that's a trend story if that continues, because you can't have two of these guys on the floor. Why not?
I mean, you're going to have one. Seems to me, if you can't have two, you can't have one.
I mean, okay,
it's not like you can spread them out and stop it. So.
So what does that do to your defense when you pull Andre Roberson and Steven Adams from the game? he just cracks up laughing. Thunder's up by 5 points. At the 3 minute mark, and they have to pull Andre Roberson and Steven Adams. By the time they get back, they're down 15
against the Kings,
because the Kings just start sending out Scal Abissier to just foul people at will. Let's talk about the good stuff first. The Thunder's defense tightened up in probably about halfway through the third quarter. You know, they got some steals. Led to some buckets. They got Carmelo Anthony rolling. I wrote a little bit about him for my game story.
Second straight game. The defense has been really, really good in the second half.
Yeah, they've turned around.
32 points in Charlotte, 36 points allowed tonight in the second half.
I thought, and look, typically this doesn't stand out that he's not playing well defensively. I didn't think Paul George had any kind of first half. I thought he played really well in the second half.
Yeah, in fourth quarter, when the game got tight,
Yeah.
In that last minute and a half, he
after Mr. Westbrook had to leave us.
Yeah. After we'll get to him.
Yeah.
Paul George just snuffed out individual possessions by himself.
Yeah, he just said, "I'm going to take this ball. Why don't you guys?"
Yeah.
Yeah. He said enough.
Not
of this.
Fight me. So we can just be clean about it.
Enough of this nonsense. There were a lot of things to write about. I chose to write about Carmelo Anthony because when he kind of got going, the Thunder was able to create some distance in that third quarter. Most underrated defensive run for me for the Thunder was that first probably like 3.5 minutes of the fourth when the second unit wasn't doing anything offensively. But they were able to hold the Kings to 2 points in the first 3.5 minutes.
I think they got 5 straight stops to open the quarter.
Yeah, they
did a good job.
That group made shots in Charlotte, but they also played really good defense in Charlotte. They turned that Charlotte game, obviously, and a lot of that was the defense. They also made a bunch of threes. Raymond Felton was finding guys, and they made shots. Couldn't make anything tonight. Patrick Patterson didn't do it until those guys were off the floor, really, when he got going making shots.
Yeah,
but they were really good defensively.
And I think I mentioned to you at one point, during the game, I can't remember what juncture it was. Maybe it was in the beginning of the second quarter or beginning of the fourth quarter. I was like, I would have started with at least Adams out there or Paul George or something like that. But we've seen at times this season, Billy Donovan throws that all-bench unit out there. They did it on the road, I think, against Utah and got out to like a 12-0 against Utah, just blew them out of the water, did it against Charlotte a couple nights ago when Raymond Felton just got crazy. And then tonight, you know, offensively didn't look good. But beginning of the fourth quarter, they hold serve. Westbrook is able to come back in. Patrick Patterson hits the 2 threes. We think the game's over. We're like, all right, Patrick Patterson hit 2 threes. That's a wrap.
And you know what's interesting about that? Westbrook came in. You know, Billy was playing the full B team. Westbrook came in and nobody else came in. Hardly ever does Westbrook play with 4 reserves.
Yeah.
And he did tonight, and it went as you said. He got 2 assists to Patrick, and then on the 3 straight possessions, they hit a 3 because Abrines followed up. 3 straight Westbrook assists on threes that blew open the game.
So we thought.
Yeah. That was all done. All done there.
This.
By the way, before we move on to that, I want to say something that I just looked up just now a little while ago when I was writing my journal off tonight's game. Patrick Patterson is a 38% career three-point shooter. Do you know what he's shooting this year from three-point range?
38%.
36.6%. He's shooting it like he always does. He just doesn't shoot them. I mean, like, he doesn't play that much. He doesn't get that many attempts. Like, I think it feels like he's had a season-long slump. He just can't make anything else.
No, and my impression is, without studying numbers, is he's more productive and shooting better the last month.
Yeah. He's definitely up. I mean, he was much worse at the beginning of the season. He just doesn't take that many shots. I mean, I think this is only the third or fourth time he's made more than two. Maybe the third
Billy
time he's
had
made
a
more
nice,
than two.
You know, Billy had that nice comment. I don't know if it's in Charlotte or where it was, maybe before Charlotte. Anyway, sometime the last week or two, talking about Felton, saying he's had some conversations with Felton, saying, "Hey,
this was
part of your
Charlotte
job is to get Patrick Patterson more shots."
Yep. He said that like he felt like Felton was taking on a little too much scoring responsibility with that group. He wanted him to kind of get those other guys involved, and one of those guys specifically was Patterson. Anyway, that's inside.
And we saw that against Charlotte.
Yep.
Felton got an assist to all 4 of those guys in the second unit.
And also, those guys made the shots. I mean, Jeremy Grant's not always going to make those threes.
Yeah.
Alex Abrines this year is not. I mean, Alex Abrines also shooting about what he shot last year.
Which is remarkable considering how poorly Alex Abrines has been in the grand scheme of things. I mean,
he's just going to make – he has a floor as a shooter. He's going to make 35, 36, 37% of his threes.
Bad teams they've played in the last 2 games, but Alex Abrines' defense hasn't been awful.
Yeah, he's been better.
He played pretty well against Charlotte.
Here's a question I have about Abrines.
Question.
I'm not saying that he's, you know, Doug Christie or anybody on defense.
Is he Doug Christie's wife? Who's a better defender, Doug Christie's wife or Alex Abrines?
Well, I assume Doug Christie's wife because she could distract you. But – is it possible that the extensive futility of Abrines on defense is health related?
Could be.
Oh, he's got the knees of it, and I could say this on the podcast because Jenny's not around. Of a 40-year-old man, and that's not a Mike Gundy reference. Jenny just doesn't like me referring to old people as being 40, but I'm 32. I can do that. Alex Abrines has very not great knees.
Well, are they going to get better?
I mean, he's 24, Barry. You think his knees are going to get better as he gets older?
Well, I really wasn't talking about a chronic. I was talking about an acute situation.
I think it's
and
chronic.
You are basically saying no. He's not.
I don't think he's going to get better this year. Now, whether he could take a summer off, he's effectively taken summers off before. He didn't do much this summer. He was trying to play and couldn't with Spain. I wonder about it. I wonder about it being a long-term thing. I asked him about that earlier this year. I wrote something about this. I talked to him in, I think we're in Denver, and I said, do you worry about it? And he said, I didn't used to. But now, you know.
This is the thing. He's never had a major knee surgery yet.
Yeah.
He's just gotten PRP or has he had a scope? I don't even know if he's had a scope or not.
I don't know. He's had the PRP at least once.
This tendonitis, is it repairable by major surgery?
This is the thing. Like, you can go in. Like Russell Westbrook has left knee tendonitis. He's probably going to have it for the rest of his career. If you go in and get a scope, you know, that takes care of the loose bodies and things like that. But basically, you're carving up cushioning on the outside of your knee or whatever. So, like, it's only a matter of time before you're going to be an old man and you're going to have bone on bone.
Yeah, bone on bone.
Yeah, maybe you can play the rest of your career and be fine, but, like, it's basically just like you're – you're ticking.
Yeah.
You're ticking clock.
Yep.
So it's not going to get better. You're going to get more cartilage or whatever.
It's a matter of how well he could play with it. Some guys play with it their whole careers. Some guys have knee tendonitis. Patrick Ewing had knee tendonitis forever. I mean, I remember that being a thing about Patrick Ewing.
How come no Vince Carter tonight? I wanted to see Vince Carter play.
So
I was disappointed.
I read this after the game. I did not know this because he didn't talk. We talked to Dave Yeager before. We don't typically talk to the visiting coach after. We don't have time. Dave Yeager said they're just going to start resting two veterans every game and sometimes three, and they started that tonight. They didn't play Vince Carter, and they didn't play Zebo tonight.
That's called tanking, Brett.
Here's the thing. They're already terrible, so I don't know why they have to take this. I was asking somebody tonight, do you think he got scared? He's like, look, man, we're trying to lose games, and we were right in this thing with the Thunder. We can't be doing this.
I'm pretty sure he got a directive from the
– although, when you're this bad, who cares who they play?
Yeah, yeah, you might as well play the youngsters and just let them get
experience. If the
Bulls
were like, hey, we're getting too good, we're going to sit some guys. I understand that. The Kings are terrible. They don't need to be sitting extra guys. Just trade Vince Carter.
Barry, you take Zach Randolph on this team?
Which team?
The Thunder.
Oh, they got an open spot, but he's not going to help them.
No, he's okay, hypothetically, like in a trade scenario where you could take a guy off of the Thunder and then get Zach Randolph. And absorb some of his salary with the trade exceptions that they have, or one of the trade exceptions they have, and then still have an open roster spot.
And he wouldn't. He'd be all right, I guess. I mean, he'd be somebody. He's sort of a poor man in his canters, who he is. That's who Zach Randolph is.
Look, Kyle Singler's collecting dust. Why not send him to Sacramento? It's not like he's going to make them better. They could still accomplish what they're doing now with Kyle Singler instead of Zach Randolph.
Yeah. Wouldn't you, if you're Sacramento, why would you want to take on Kyle Singler? Wouldn't you rather have Zach Randolph around? He's a fairly pleasant guy, always smiling.
Why wouldn't you want to do Zach Randolph a solid while also making your team worse so you can get a better draft?
So you're saying, oh, well, that's a good point. If you're trying to lose, trading for Kyle Singler is a solid strategy.
And it is not even like an insult to Kyle Singler because, like, it's more of a compliment to Zach Randolph because –
get him out of the way because in case he wins a game for you.
Exactly.
Cost you a lottery spot.
And you're not going to play Kyle Singler over, Justin Jackson. You're going to play Justin Jackson because you want him to get better.
Yeah. Well, they got some interesting young players, Sacktown does, but Fox,
you know,
Jackson, Hill, they got interesting players.
Kentucky doesn't have very many good guys this year, so I don't know who Sacramento's going to draft.
Yeah.
They usually just like, we'll just take the best Kentucky with that guy. Whoever Kentucky's best guy.
How many they've taken? Is it three in a row?
Three. Cauley Stein. They started three tonight. Cauley Stein, Fox, and Scal
Labissiere. Okay, we've talked way too much about Kyle Singler and the Kings.
And the Kings in general. Haven't gotten to Westbrook yet.
Let's get to this Westbrook stuff. For those of you at home who may not have been watching this game.
Literal statement. Anybody listening to this podcast knows what happened at the end of this game.
Oh, yeah, because that's pretty much one of, like, two or three things that was interesting that happened in this game. Russell Westbrook got ejected, got two technicals really quickly.
Quick.
Drove to the basket, appeared to have taken some contact.
Fox got him in the mouth.
He got him in the face?
Got a little bit of that. So he's kind of swiping down. He hits him. I watched it in slow motion a couple times, and you can tell Westbrook just stops on the play. He doesn't continue through to the rim. He sort of folds up because his mouth has gotten hit, and you can see it. He got hit. So it happened.
Yeah, well, you know, and Westbrook, I think, has learned as the season's gone on to whenever you get hit in the face, just go to the deck. Go to the floor.
Yes.
He's learned. He's
learned. He didn't get hit like that.
Yeah,
he sold it.
Yeah, but he's learned. Yeah. He's learned through the season. If you go to the floor, you're probably – something good is probably going to happen. He learned from the Melo Nurkic
Portland
thing.
Situation where he did not go to the floor. And yeah. Billy Donovan said afterward, maybe we should have had him lay on the floor a little longer. Maybe he would have gotten a call.
Yeah, so from that point on, Westbrook –
that cost Billy Donovan a little cash.
You know what? Billy might be giving up a little bit more if they don't rescind that tech. We'll get to that too. Westbrook goes to the floor, gets called for traveling because he still had the ball and took a couple steps after he absorbed the contact. Pops up. I don't know what was said. Billy didn't know what was said either. Nope. He apparently said some things to where the official found it necessary to
Matt Bolin.
I hope I didn't spell his name wrong in the game story. Might have to go back and check that one. Found it necessary to say, hey, Mr. Westbrook, two technicals for you. Billy Donovan in postgame explained to the media that he was trying to yell at an official, not angrily so much, but to kind of get like an explanation of what was happening.
And not Boland. It was another official, right? He was trying to yell to somebody else.
Yes, it was someone else. And then he was given the technical.
Yeah.
When he was yelling at the officials. So when all of this is transpiring, before all this transpires, the Thunder is up 11 points. Suddenly, they just give up three free throws are awarded to the Kings, and now it's an 8-point game. So Westbrook, you know, he walks off, and you got a game where it really shouldn't be a game. And
they got it 7 and had the ball twice with a chance to cut it more. And it's just ridiculous. I know he got hit in the face. I know he was a foul. But you can't get ejected with the game still in the balance. You can't do that.
I think there was there has been, for a lot of the season, some mounting frustration with officiating from these guys. Fair or not, I'm not saying they're right about this. But, I mean, Paul George is in a perpetual state of just raising his arms up in disbelief. He does this all the time. And I think it boiled over tonight, certainly, because that's one call late in a game where that reaction was certainly – there was some other stuff there. There was some stuff where he was – some stuff had built up and he was unloading on some of that. It also, by the way, was a pretty quick trigger, it seemed to me. Now, I don't know what he said.
Yeah, to get two.
Yeah. The second one was really quick, and who knows what he said. He could have said something terrible to get that second one. You don't have to – sometimes just saying the wrong thing, even if you don't say a lot of it, can get you in trouble.
And we didn't get a chance to talk to Mr. Westbrook because he Mr. Westwolf. He was wearing a jacket that said Westwolf on the back, which is the most Russell Westbrook thing ever. We could have predicted that he was going to leave pretty quickly.
I saw him. I was stopped on my way to the Billy Donovan news conference to go to the restroom, walked out. There was Westbrook walking away.
I am having to text our desk right now because I messed up that official's name. I called him Bullen, which is actually the Rockets guy, Matt Bullen.
Oh, Matt Bullard.
Bullard.
Matt Bullard. Messed up Matt Bullard's name. He's a player.
Yeah.
Or was.
Was.
Big talk.
Okay. But, you know, that's 9 technicals for Westbrook now this season.
He's still got a little cushion before. What's the ejection? 16?
16. But he's going to have to pay some money.
Yep.
He's now, I think, 2nd in the league. He's tied with a couple more guys for 2nd in the league. I think Boogie's got 11.
Yeah, I was going to say, Boogie Cousins and he are always kind of battling it out.
Yeah, it's a race for the technical lead.
I bet Billy Donovan's comes back if what
Billy
said about the game, about that play was true.
Well, either way, you can't get yourself kicked out of a tight game. If you want to get kicked out of a route, fine. But that one was a little bit too...
He did that last year. He got himself kicked out of a route. They were getting routed. He was just tired of being there. I think he was just ready to
go. Well, I didn't blame him. I was tired of watching. It's the one game I quit on all year.
I was there, so I couldn't. But I would have. He actually hung around and talked.
After that one?
After that one. And the weird thing is sometimes.
You're talking about Westbrook, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He was tired of that game. He was like.
Sometimes he's actually kind of good. Last year, after that Memphis game, he got so mad. That was the game he sort of went in and said, I feel like I'm going to the rim and I'm not getting calls and all that stuff. And everybody, we were in such a hurry. I remember being such a tight deadline. And once he said what he said, which was all really good stuff, I was like, I got to go right now. I'm done. And he was almost like frustrated that people didn't ask him more questions. He really wanted to go in that night about the officiating. And it was like a minute and a half, and that was about all he had. We all of us had to leave. And then Portland this year too. He got pretty heated.
And I was excited. I was excited to talk to him tonight too. Yep. And I pulled one of the Thunder guys aside. I was like, look, can we get because I've been wanting to ask Russell Westbrook about officiating because it's been kind of a point of contention throughout the league this year. You know, I asked Carmelo Anthony about it last week. Relationship between officials and players. Melo popped off a little bit again tonight. We'll get to that. So I was curious to think about what Russell Westbrook thinks about it because he's a guy who takes a lot of contact. He's been, I thought, pretty diplomatic about talking to the officials this year. You know, he's had his typical "that's BS" or whatever. Yep. He's had some of those too, and he's gotten teased. But he tends to be pretty diplomatic with the refs. He walks up to him, talks to him, tries to figure out what's going on. I think he's gotten better at that, and I think he's matured some from some of the things we've seen from him in the past. But I wanted to talk to him about it, and I didn't get a chance to, unfortunately. We'll probably talk to him about it in the next couple of days, and then he'll give us some insight as to how he feels about the officiating.
Maybe he will, and maybe he won't. I remember on that same trip where he was mad in Portland, he said he wasn't going to talk about it anymore, basically. He said, like, don't ask me every time there's some kind of foul situation. Don't ask me what I think about officiating. This was, like, in Sacramento, I think.
Well, he said that to you, so yeah. I can ask him, and sure. Then he can just tell me that.
Yeah, you weren't there.
Yeah, I wasn't there. I'll just be like, oh, I wasn't in Portland.
Loophole. With me.
Anyway, how about what Carmelo Anthony said, Barry, when you asked him about the officiating?
Well,
the technical.
Yeah, one of the young reporters asked him about the officiating in general and said, you talked about the officiating a few weeks ago, but now, you know, we had this tonight. What do you – Is this been a season-long problem, blah, 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 whatever. And Carmelo said, I'm done. I'm
done with them.
I'm done with them.
I'm done not, with them. And I don't know what he meant, but it was funny.
And he said, no disrespect, but I'm done with the officials.
Yeah, and I think he was saying no disrespect to the person who asked.
Yes, no doubt.
Saying no disrespect to your question. What I didn't know, there's no context for Melo, whether he was saying, I'm done talking about this, or I'm done with them. I'm fed up with them.
I'm pretty sure he meant I'm done talking about it.
That's
the way I took it.
But he could also have just meant, like, I'm done with those guys, like, in the sense of I'm frustrated.
He could, but I don't think so. And then, like, 30 seconds later, 45 seconds later, I said, I mean, you guys had the game well in hand, and then Russ gets ejected, and you let Sacramento back in the game. Is that frustrating, or what was your mind? Whatever I asked. And Carmelo said, we let him back in the game, or the refs let him back in the game. So he clearly was not finished talking about the refs. He's still a little chatty about the refs.
All right, let's play a game on the fine-o-meter, with one being that's pity pat. That's not a fine. To 10 being just send the check now. Don't even wait till the league comes. Where was Carmelo Anthony tonight on the fine-o-meter from 1 to 10?
So these are hard to predict. Because sometimes once you get one, and I don't know if Carmelo's actually been fined for talking about the officials yet. I don't think he has.
No, Paul George got fined.
Because he didn't say anything. After that Portland game, he was like, eh, it's over.
Yeah, Westbrook got fined for that one.
Paul George got fined. Tonight would have to be low, though.
It's pretty low. Here's the one thing.
It was shade, though.
I'm always looking at things that can be like, oh. So the one thing that kind of set me off a little bit there was he said they let him back in the game. And that implies a little something there if you really want to think about it. It implies the officials let this team back in the game as if the officials directed the game to be close. And the league, no likey, that kind of assertion. Now, you don't necessarily have to take it that way. He could just be saying they got back in the game because the officials made bad calls. And, like, criticizing the calls, it's iffy whether you end up getting anything or not.
I'm going to go 5 on the first one that guy asked. I'm going to go 5. That could go either way. It depends on your interpretation of what he was talking about in that moment. I'm going to go 7.5 on what you asked.
How could that first one be anything but a 0?
Yeah, I think that one's a 0.
I'm done.
It could go either way.
That's like dodging.
He said, I'm done with the refs.
Yeah, I'm done with them.
He said, I'm done with them. I'm done with the refs.
Okay, yeah.
He said that.
Okay. Yeah.
That depends on how they want to interpret that.
Yeah. I don't think that's what
I don't think that's what he meant.
But the second one, I don't think it's a zero. The second one's not a zero. No. It's like a
the second one's definitely not a zero.
You know, he could get one for that.
Yeah. That was slick. He was trying to get that on the slick.
Nobody else is getting one. I mean Westbrook's getting one because there's you get one with technicals at a certain point. Is he at the point where you get fines? He is.
Oh yeah.
He's past the point where you get fines.
Y'all don't think Billy's gonna
I don't think Billy's gonna get
y'all
fined.
Think Billy's gonna get,
because Billy said the official apologized to him.
Right.
He said that guy came over and said he made a mistake. And usually if that's the case, if they have admitted they're wrong, you're allowed to say that. That's not like
that's
not a problem.
And that's why Billy went in. He wouldn't have went in if he didn't know that the official would if the official hadn't apologized.
By the way, bummer of all this happened with like 2:50 to play. So it's not going to be in the last 2 minute report. We're not going to know what they say about the foul, whether that was a foul or not.
That is a bummer.
It is a bummer.
Bumsville. But frankly, if you have a last 2 minute report against the Kangs,
yeah, it's a problem.
That's a problem in itself.
Not good.
That's probably not something you want to be taking a good look at. Okay, we're about 26 minutes into this podcast.
I want to say one other thing I thought that was interesting that Melo said that had nothing to do with the referees. Melo doesn't think you should play on Martin Luther King Day.
Yes, that was interesting.
Yeah, that was interesting.
He was like, we shouldn't have played. We shouldn't have played.
That was interesting.
And he said it's good for the – he said great for us, great for the franchise, great for the city, whatever all he said. If you are going to have to play, great. But he clearly meant he thinks they should have the day off. On this day of all days.
We should have followed up with him on that.
Should have. He went really long tonight, and it was hard to double back.
I was a little surprised when he said that.
Me too.
And then I had to jump in and get my question in about his defense or whatever, but I should have asked him more. I should have asked him to expand on the
Martin
Luther
King Day. I guess I see his point. On the other hand, few entities in America have embraced Martin Luther King Day the way the NBA has.
I agree. And I do think there's a great – now – if you wanted to make a case that they should limit the games and that Atlanta and Memphis, who kind of always have home games, and I think the Knicks typically play.
Yeah, or Washington would be a good one.
If you just wanted to say that, like, these teams that sort of it's a tradition that they should be the only ones, I can understand that because I think everybody plays or pretty close to everybody plays.
22 teams played.
So I understand his point. But I also think it is a great showcase day for the league, and it is a day when the league kind of highlights. Look at what LeBron James was doing earlier today. He was talking about social issues as a result of what the day was. And so I think, you know, I do think there's a real value for the league in playing here and drawing attention to some things that the league wants to draw attention to.
Well, also, look at tonight here at Chesapeake. The Halftime Entertainment was a 10-minute video about Martin Luther King.
Right.
Which, you know, was not typical Oklahoma City Fair. So I would probably have to disagree with Melo on this issue. I think playing on MLK Day draws a lot of acclaim and a spotlight to him and his causes. The TNT doubleheader, maybe it's a triple header for all I know. The TNT doubleheader, clearly, you know,
I think
I've seen that in the past. I mean, it's their pre and post game shows are monuments to MLK.
Yep.
So I think the league really does a nice job of promoting Martin Luther King.
All right, let's wrap this thing up here with a little bit of standings. I think I surprised a couple of people tonight when I said that the Minnesota Timberwolves are number 3 in the West right now. And the Thunder has no more games against them. The Thunder is closer to the Pelicans in the standings than they are the Timberwolves and the Spurs, who are both 29-16. They're a game and a half out of the six.
They're 29-16.
Timberwolves and Spurs.
So the Thunder is now 4.5 behind both.
Yes. And they are a game and a half ahead. Oh, actually, that's just a game. No, they're only a game ahead of the Pelicans. Pelicans are 22-20.
Wow, Pelicans getting with it.
They get to play the Pelicans some more.
Fly, Pelican.
Right? They've only played the Pelicans once.
Yeah, because I'm going to New Orleans, and then they're coming here.
Yeah.
I think. They're coming here, right?
Yeah, they are.
They haven't been here yet, have they?
No.
No.
Came here preseason. That's what I'm throwing.
Pelican. Look at the Pelican. Okay.
So, for all their rewards, the Thunder has a 2-game winning streak.
That is two. It didn't even
feel
like it.
And the Lakers coming in, and I would say that means they're going to win a third straight game, but who knows? Look at the worst teams in the league. The Lakers are one of the few they haven't lost to, so they might be due to lose to the Lakers.
Of the of the bad teams, the Thunder's pounded the Lakers the past couple of years. There was that one Swaggy game in LA last year that was just Swaggy stealing the ball from somebody at like the 3-point line and hitting a three.
Any walk something.
There was a lot of tomfoolery in that one. But other than that, the Thunder has just annihilated the Lakers the past couple of years. So I don't think
it's the most dominant game they've played this year by a wide shot. Now, Lonzo didn't play, and I'm interested to see Lonzo. There was something going on with that game. Those guys were just excited to be in L.A., so who knows if they'll have the same kind of pep in their step on Wednesday. But they should beat that team. That's a bad team.
And then the Cavs on Saturday.
Cavs are
they go ahead and lose tonight to Golden State?
They did. Cavs are stumbling right now.
Cavs are 7.5 back of the Celtics, and they're in the three. Cavs, they're in the three spot.
The Cavs record isn't that much better than the Thunder.
Cavs are 26-17.
You know, last year they were also
2.5 games ahead.
Thunder's 24-20.
They were, if I recall correctly, the Cavs were in a bit of a swoon last year when the Thunder went there to play in an afternoon and got beat. Cavs beat them.
That was a Steven Adams-less game, was it not?
Might have been.
Because he missed the Cavs and the Spurs game, both of those games that you went to.
Yeah, that's right. Was that concussion, Steven Adams?
It's typically concussion when he misses two games like that.
I don't remember. I remember the game he got the concussion. I don't remember when those games fell.
The Cavs are a game ahead of the Heat.
The Heat were on a roll before tonight. They got beat by the Bulls.
Cavs are 2-8 in their last 10. Thunder's 5-5.
A clash of titans on Saturday. Kudos, whichever network. Is this ABC on Saturday?
I'm sure it'll be an ABC game. Anyway, we're talking about all kinds of scheduling logistics that people probably don't want to talk about. Any last words, folks?
Wins are better than losses. So they got that going for them.
Yeah.
And other than that, not much to write home about. I have a lot to write about, actually. Just not. I don't think we learned much tonight.
Barry, if you were the league, how would you, or do you even think that this situation should be addressed between officials, coaches, players?
Well, I'm the wrong guy to ask, because if I was a refs, I'd just meet his third ear and said, anybody talks to you, give them a technical. And if they talk to you again, toss them out of the game. The refs don't bother the players. Why are the players bothering the refs?
You'd be part of the perceived problem.
I never have understood why they put up with all the nonsense that they do.
You would be part of the perceived problem for the players.
No, I don't get it. Just
you would.
You worry about your business. Let the refs worry about theirs.
I see what side you stand on.
This is not everybody's talking about a culture of disunity and non-cooperation. What we got a coach. What we have is a culture of bitching. That's what we got.
Okay.
That's what we got.
Okay. We're gonna leave that in the podcast. I dropped a something a couple of weeks ago. We're leaving that one in.
You dropped something stiffer than
much.
That. That was when things were happening in the crowd and from the light bulb pop.
Light pops. Yeah.
Just cut it out. Quit worry about your own. Worry about 7 turnovers. Worry about foul shots. Worry about rotating on defense. How about worrying about that?
10 turnovers.
If I was a ref in a game and some of these guys walked up to me and wanted to know what's going on, I'd say, how'd you let that guy not box you out? I mean, you gave up 3 offensive rebounds on 1 possession.
You get punched.
And you're talking to me?
You get punched.
You know, it would be kind of funny if it would be pretty funny if an official would be like, look, I'll call the fouls, but you guys are going to miss the free throws anyway.
Yes. That
would be pretty solid.
That would be.
Yes.
That would be.
Yes.
I think they got it. I do think it's become a little bit more of a problem. Now, look, you watch a college basketball game, you see Ted Valentine turn his back on a kid or whatever.
That was
like,
ridiculous.
Like, that stuff's way worse.
He's been doing that for 20 years.
These guys have it pretty good compared to, like, there's some worse officiating situations, but it does feel like it's gotten more strained. And I think some of this is like some of this last 2 minute stuff, and the you look at like the awareness of bad calls and how aware players are of the calls that are going against them. And I, you know, I think you got a situation like this. You got a team. This team has lost 2 games where there were calls in the last second that the league said were the wrong call. And I think there's some frustration building over the course of time, and it seems to be happening across the league.
And I think there's frustration that they're playing like trash.
That too, with this group, for sure.
Yeah. Anyway, all right, we're reaching our 12 a.m. quota, or not quota, like cutoff limit. So, once again, thanks for listening to the podcast. We always appreciate you guys downloading, listening, however you consume it via the blog or Apple Podcasts. But thanks again. We will see you after the Lakers game on Tuesday. And all right, thanks.